Hello and welcome to the Metro West Daily News Podcast. My name is Bill Shaner, your host, and today is Monday, January 30th. This is sort of part two from our Women's March episode last week. Megan Kelly, my co-host, went to a march on Sunday in Copley Square in Boston, sponsored by the Center for American Islamic Relations. The protest was in reaction to several executive orders signed by Donald Trump over the weekend or on Friday.
It was Friday afternoon.
So, Megan, why don't you tell us a little bit about these executive orders?
Sure. So Trump signed an executive order Friday afternoon that temporarily bans travel of residents from seven particular countries, and it puts for 90 days, and then it puts a 120-day wait on refugees, and I believe the Syrian refugees are also, it's also temporarily suspended. The countries that people are banned traveling from is Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Libya, and Somalia. It wasn't clear to me whether this was officially supposed to happen or not, but it did. One of the consequences was that people who were traveling here starting Friday who were born in those countries or even perhaps have dual U.S. one of those countries' citizenship, even if they are legal residents, like with a green card, or if they had a valid visa, they were not allowed into the country either. They were being detained at airports across the country, and a bunch of lawyers, and especially in Massachusetts, filed with the ACLU, filed an injunction on Saturday night asking for a stay on these I don't know what you want to call it, detainees, I guess.
Right.
And that was granted. So people who were being stuck at Logan Airport were allowed to proceed as far as we can tell. Of course, the government is very shady and doesn't really tell us everything about who was held and who was not being held. Mm-hmm. But there was this, the orders that came in to let these people come in. And like I said, these, a lot of these people are legal residents. They have a green card and they legally live here. This is their home.
Right.
So people over the weekend with CARE, the Massachusetts branch of CARE, the Center for American Islamic Relations, got together, decided to have a rally at Copley on Sunday afternoon, and they had put together a pretty quickly a program. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much a march, it was pretty much just a rally, but Boston Mayor Marty Walsh spoke, Senator Elizabeth Warren spoke, Senator Ed Markey spoke, and there were some other people too. It was a little hard to hear their speeches because they didn't have much of a sound system, and it was very, very crowded.
Right.
But a lot of the people that I talked to were not as in quite the high spirits that the people at the Women's March were. People were a little more angry than optimistic, but it seemed like a lot of people were pleased about how many people came out.
Right. So estimates going into it were what?
I mean, going into it, they had a Facebook event that I looked at. Actually, is how I found out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was only like in the couple thousands were even interested in going. And then by the time I showed up just before 1 o'clock on Sunday, Copley Square was getting pretty crowded. They shut down the roads around it. And by the end of the day, I was hearing between like 20 and 25,000 people there.
Wow. I mean, for a protest in which there was a day to plan,
yeah,
that's a pretty significant turnout.
Yeah, and it was backed up. People were pretty much standing on the steps of the BPL.
Mm-hmm.
You could walk on the streets like Boylston and Dartmouth, and then I think it's St. James Street on the other side of Copley, where the Fairmont Copley Hotel is. But yeah, there were a lot of people there. It I feel like the Women's March, there were so many people. Any kind of gathering is going to look small compared to
right.
that.
The Women's March was estimated to be...
It was like 175,000, I think, right. was the last estimate in Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so this was a lot fewer people, but it was still fairly crowded, although you could move around a little more freely in the crowd.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of the messages of the speakers? I mean, who was it? It was...
It was Marty Walsh, yeah. Elizabeth Warren, okay. Ed Markey. I think Tito Jackson, who's running for mayor, also
right.
spoke.
Okay.
So it was very much a you know, we're not going to allow this. Boston is the sanctuary city, so mm-hmm. there was a lot of talk about that. Right. People in the crowd were bursting out into spontaneous cheers and calls to action as well.
Right.
There was a guy from one of the unions there who had a megaphone who was shouting about how, you know, these are all our brothers and sisters, and people were cheering. And a lot of the people that I talked to said that they just wanted to come and show their support. There were some Jewish people that I talked to, and Anne Brennan, our editor-in-chief, also went to talk to people, some Jewish people who said, you know, I'm a Jew, and I really feel like we, out of anyone, really know how this is, and we're here to support our Muslim brothers and sisters.
Right. So actually, you told me that Anne, our editor-in-chief, had a particularly inventive method.
Yes, it was such a good idea. So it's when you're a reporter and you're probing in the crowd, you know, I'm not coming from the Globe where it kind of doesn't matter where you're from. I'm trying to look for people
right.
The area.
We have maybe 20 towns that qualify right. as our coverage
So
area.
It's a big area. You know, it's right. not going to be impossible to find people. But yeah. I was talking to a lot of great people, but none of them were from the Metro West or Milford area. And right. then Anne told me, oh, I got some people locally. And I'm thinking, what did she do?
Yeah, kind of a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, yeah, it turns out she held up a sign that said, I'm from Metro West. Do you want to talk to me? And yeah. so people saw that and said yes. So
oh, wow.
I thought that was great.
Yeah,
that's
for sure a good idea. So what were some of the chants? What were some of the messages being mic'd up by the crowd?
So there was a lot of, you know, this is what this, you know, show me what democracy looks yeah. like. This is what democracy looks like. A lot of people held up signs quoting the poem that goes with the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. You know, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. A couple of people had signs that said it was a riff on that poem about first they came for the socialists. And, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't say anything because I was not a socialist. So they held up signs that said first they came for the Muslims. And I said, not today, and expletive deleted.
Right.
So there were some funny signs. There were a lot of people holding up American flags and, you know, a lot of kind of I'm against this, dump Trump kind of things. People right. were pretty fired up.
Yeah. So you said earlier that there was sort of a difference in mood between this and the Women's March. Having been on to both, can you expand on that?
Yeah, so the people that I talked to at the Women's March were pretty much, to a person, very enthusiastic and felt very optimistic that this was going to make a difference
mm-hmm.
and that they were really glad to come out and see everybody that day.
For sure, it was sort of a historic day.
Yeah, the people that I talked to yesterday were not sad or upset, but they seemed a little angrier. I did talk to some Muslims who said they were very heartened by this big response of people who came out.
Right.
But a lot of the people who I talked to just said they were so disgusted by this order and that they wanted to come out and show, you know, their Muslim friends and neighbors and whomever that this was not right, that they didn't support it. But the tone and some of the language people used was definitely a little more angry, I think.
Right. So... Yeah, so I saw on Twitter, I think it was Matt Visor from The Globe, had a really good tweet where he was like, this is the sort of moment where we decide what kind of America we want to live in. So when I was coming up in school, and I'm sure for a lot of people, it was, the Statue of Liberty, open immigration is kind of like... A linchpin.
Well, it's like a literal beacon. I
yeah.
mean, people it greets you when you come into New York Harbor if you were on a boat.
You learn
from Europe.
You learn when you're in school. You learn first, the Pledge of Allegiance, and then probably second, you learn that America was a nation built on immigrants. So it's a very interesting time, I think, right now, where that sort of open border philosophy tied to globalization in the past couple of decades is really running into this nationalism of Trump's campaign. Were there any Trump supporters there? Were there any nationalists?
I looked. I kind of went on the outskirts of the crowd to see if there was anybody holding up a sign or maybe having a dialogue or perhaps even an argument with some of the people there. But right. I didn't see anybody. I mean, it's not to say that none of them were there. It's just that I didn't happen to see any of them. There were definitely some people who were just kind of gawking.
Right.
Out of curiosity.
Yeah, just like, what are these people saying?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. What is this for?
Yeah, right.
But, what you were saying about this is a nation of immigrants, that kind of thing, that was a sentiment that a lot of people said to me, that they felt very strongly that this is a nation of immigrants and right. that was why they were there, to show that they supported immigration.
So I think it's worth noting that these bans are temporary.
Yes, they are temporary, and a couple of things have already changed today where they made a clarification about anyone with a green card that they will be allowed to come in mm-hmm. to the country without any further restrictions. And like, this is not anyone with a green card. It's anyone with the green card who is from one of those seven nations.
Right, right.
Although Trump did tweet this morning about basically calling Senator Chuck Schumer a crybaby. because I believe Schumer was
right.
somewhere he was crying because he was just caught up with emotion, I guess.
Right.
And
it was at the D.C. rally, I think.
Yeah, and the Trump administration definitely seems to be a bit on the defensive. They called the media the opposition party today.
Right.
So
doubling down on that Steve Bannon thing.
Yeah. But yeah, so it seems like a lot of people who worked in national security under Obama and under President George W. Bush are decrying all of these moves, saying mm-hmm. that they would have never signed off on this. Trump did say that he has said in press conferences and in tweets that Obama instituted a similar program, but I looked that up today because I was curious about that myself.
Yep.
I found a Washington Post article, which I'll link to in the show notes, but it basically said that the only thing that's even remotely similar to this was back in 2013, there was an incident where an Iraqi who had helped the U.S. With kind of like translating and logistics kind of thing during the second Iraqi war, his fingerprints were found in like the remnants of an IED. Mm-hmm. So that led to all these questions of like, wait a minute, whoa, like we can't let this guy in because there's questions about him. So they did have to do some kind of re-vetting of Iraqis who were here and settled, Iraqi refugees.
Right.
Because a lot of Iraqi refugees actually risk their lives during these wars to translate and to help American soldiers
right.
go throughout the countryside, and they were promised, like, we will do our best to get you here to the U.S. as a refugee. So that happened. They did kind of re-vet them. They slowed down the program a little bit, so it wasn't quite as quick, didn't go quite as quickly as they had previously been doing, but there was no ban. There was no, I'm closing this.
Wholesale.
There's no, right. yeah, there's no wholesale, no wholesale ban on it, so.
Right. I mean, yeah, so I mean, ostensibly, this is to allow time for the administration to work out a new vetting system or
I guess.
Immigration policy.
They didn't release a lot of details. It's hard to go on the little information that we right. get to say what their intention really is.
Right. So that's less of that aspect being a 5 or 6 day after story, and more
right.
of it being that there's really nothing to go off of right now.
Right. And yeah. I mean, the thing is, too, is that if you are an immigrant here, or especially if you're applying for refugee status, like if you're from Syria, it's not an easy thing. You can't just waltz up to a U.S. consulate or a U.S. embassy abroad and say, hey, I'd like to come visit. You have to go through extensive background checks. You have to have someone here to sponsor you, mm-hmm. so that it doesn't have to be a relative. It could be, you know, a lot of community groups and churches in the U.S. will say, oh, we'll sponsor a Syrian family kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
But it's not. I mean, Trump talks a lot about extensive vetting. We kind of already have that in place.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever known anyone who's gone through the green card process, which I have.
I have a childhood friend whose family went through it.
It's not easy.
Israeli immigrants. Yeah, it took okay, I have a couple friends actually, and for both of them it took 7-ish years.
Yeah, and that's expensive and right. It's not, you know, you have to kind of play by their rules. There's not a lot of wiggle room. You have to pay an attorney, you have to pay all these fees. So it's not an easy process.
Now, at the protest, did you speak with anyone who is a Muslim, who subscribes to Islamic faith?
So I talked to a young guy and his father, and the younger guy was there with his wife, mm-hmm. who was white and she was blonde. And they both said that they were really pleased to see people come out. The dad was from Pakistan, and he said that, you know, he's been here since the 70s, and sometimes they'll get dirty looks or that kind of thing, but that he was really pleased to see people come out. I also talked to a woman from Revere who was there with her two daughters. They were 12 and 9, and all three of them were wearing headscarves. And the mom said that their family was originally from Pakistan as well, and they said that they have always felt very welcome in Revere. They've never had a problem, and that they were really glad to see so many people come out and support them. And the girl said, too, that they feel pretty welcome, and kind of any trouble that they've had at school is mostly just, the mom said it's just kids being kids. Right. Not anything specifically against them with their faith. But, I think that it really sounded like to me. And then, you know, there were other people, too. But there were a lot of women wearing the hijab, the headscarf.
Right. Yeah. And they felt safe doing so.
Yeah, they seemed, you know, they seemed to be, they looked okay. Like, I think that I didn't see, you know, those would be the people that I think would be under the most visible target, because you can't tell a Muslim man just by looking at him, because they don't wear anything in particular. But, you know, Muslim women, regardless of their ethnic background, will often wear a hijab. And mm-hmm. so that makes them kind of more of a visible target. But they, you know, they seemed okay. As safe as one can be in a massive crowd. But, you know, people brought their kids. And I feel like that's kind of the standard for me. If I see little children there, that can't be that bad.
Yeah, right. So you have a couple audio clips from the from the protest, right?
Yes. So I talked to two young women they were both 19, named Astrid and Megan, and they were there. Astrid goes to BC and Megan goes to BU, and they're both, I can't remember exactly, but they're local girls too. Mm-hmm. They're from Everett and Malden.
Okay, great. Yeah, let's play that.
And so on this clip, it's Astrid and Megan, and Astrid is the one who speaks first. So what brought you both out today?
Well, this freaking sucks, and it's kind of awful, like, just, like, you know, like, just thinking about, like, human rights and people who are suffering elsewhere and look to this country for hope, and this is just, like, barring that, and it's unconstitutional, and it's just not right, like, just to ban people because of their faith and because of actions of others. Like, we've seen this before, and this... it's just a path of history we don't want to go back down.
Who are you, Megan?
I came because I definitely want to throw, like, all of my support behind people and, you know, like, speak for those who can't speak. And I think it's egregious, honestly, like, just how quickly with, like, the signing of a ban all of this can go into effect, and how millions of lives are changed just through one action, and we don't even get a say in that process. And I just think it's not right. It's a violation of so many people's human rights, and I think so many people around the world are in desperate need, and we're always saying that we're a country that welcomes all and helps all, and this is not what's happening.
Did you guys go to the Women's March last weekend?
Yes.
What did you think of that?
I think it was really productive and really helpful to, like, just see, like, how united we are against this administration and against what this administration is professing to do to, like, us Americans. Like, so I thought it was really productive.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I thought it was really energizing, like, just being in the presence. And I think, like, a lot of my friends were kind of like, what does it do, though? Like, you know, just marching and chanting. But I think most important, one of the most important parts of the entire fight is visibility and being seen and just being out here. Every person counts, every number counts. So it was definitely really cool to see everybody come for all these different reasons, because there's a whole lot of intersectionality. So
very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that pretty much sums up the mood of the protest, that kind of captures how, at least from reading about it, how a lot of people there,
yeah, definitely
felt. So you're kind of on the protest beat now, huh?
Yeah, and my parents live in Back Bay, and they have a parking spot. And
oh, nice.
I actually lucked out yesterday. I found a spot right behind Trinity Church on Clarendon, but they had my kids, so I had to go back there and get my kids. And when we were leaving, my dad was like, "Well, you need to use a parking spot next weekend. Let me know."
See you again for the next thing.
Right, because I parked there for the Women's March, too.
Right. Well, so. I think it's totally, I mean, the local response to this new administration is probably one of the most important things we can be covering right now. So, good. Keep going. Keep using that parking space at your mom's house, and we'll keep covering these protests. Very good. And now, as we do every time, it's our Around the Keurig segment, where we share, stuff to talk about. We like talk about stuff, so we're just gonna talk about some stuff.
Stuff is good.
You know, in our office, we have an old Keurig machine that has kind of a notoriety around here. So
that's, sounds like that's a small plane taking off when you turn it on.
Right, or a toy helicopter. I don't know, either one. So, Megan, what do you got this week?
So, well, to celebrate, of course, today is my birthday, and I
didn't say happy birthday yet.
Thank you.
I'll say it first on air. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Bill. So I always knew as a kid, like, who shares my birthday, FDR, Christian Bale, all the important people.
Right.
But today I learned that someone else shares my birthday, and his name is Fred Korematsu. And if you go onto Google today, he's on the Google Doodle.
Oh, no way.
Yes. So today would have been his 98th birthday. And in 1942, when Fred Korematsu was a young man, he refused to be detained under the Japanese internment program.
Mm-hmm.
And he sued the government, and he lost. So he was interned anyway. But 40 years later, after some stuff came to light, the government reversed their decision, and in 1998, President Clinton awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a good doodle by Google.
Yeah, so I love these. The topical. Google doodles are so interesting. Yeah. I find out so many interesting things about people I never knew.
Plus, he has your same birthday.
Exactly. Plus, he has the same birthday as me, which is very important.
Right.
But more important than that, I think, is that Korematsu was really instrumental in helping the policy officially be overturned and found unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful that Bill Clinton honored him in such a way.
That's great. My Around the Keurig submission is going to sound so dumb in comparison to that. As I think it just tends to do.
I don't know, but I'm all like, it's my birthday. Yeah. It's not even a milestone birthday.
Well,
so.
Yeah, so this weekend I was watching Portlandia. I love that show with Carrie Brownstein and Fred Armisen, and there's this skit where Fred Armisen is like a manly man who builds furniture, and like all the women are like, "Ooh, he builds furniture! Like, oh, I wish I had a real man like that." And when they cut to scenes of him building furniture, instead of using the audio from like a buzzsaw or a sander or something, it's just someone mouthing it. Like it shows him like cutting a wood, and they just go, and then he's like sanding something, and it's like, oh man, I must have watched it 10 times in a row. It was. We'll link to it in the show notes. I think there's a clip on YouTube where it just takes out those bits, but it's just such an out of left field funny thing, you know, because at first you're like, wait, is that, what is that? And then it's so clear that it's someone doing it with their mouth.
That show is so funny. One of my favorite sketches was when they were like, Carrie Brownstein and Fred Armisen were like a couple, and they decided to, this is back in the day when you had to rent videos, like from Netflix or something. Yeah. You had to get the disc, but they did Battlestar Galactica, and they like watched it for like a week straight and quit their jobs. And if you watch Battlestar Galactica, like that's what happens. Yeah. Is that you just get sucked into it, and then it ends, and you're like, wait, this can't be, this can't be it.
One of my favorite skits and most topical is when they have the new company buy the newspaper in Portland.
Oh yeah,
and they're like, you're not journalists anymore. You're linkalists. And like like these old journals are having this somber moment where they're like, I don't even know who I am anymore. And then there's that bit where they're like, one of our stories got 70 billion views. Read it. And it's like this old journal. And he goes, Charlize Theron, NSFW.
Right.
That's it. That's all I wrote. It's just his name with that under it. Oh, yeah. That really got me good. That was,
that's a pretty good show.
Muy funny. But yeah, Portlandia is just an awesome show.
I think it's on Netflix.
It's on
right?
Netflix, and there are clips on Hulu. Yeah, but best way to watch is on Netflix.
Cool.
They have all of it. Right.
Thanks for listening to the Metro West Daily News Podcast. This podcast was produced by Megan Kelly and Bill Shaner and was edited by Bill Shaner. Music was provided by the band Born Without Bones. You can find us on Twitter, we're at Metro West Daily, or on Instagram at Metro West Daily. You can also catch up on old episodes at MetroWestDailyNews.com/podcast. And if you would take the time on iTunes to give us a ratings and a review, that would really help us out and help us find new listeners. Thanks, and have a great week. Why can't I play dirt?